now in our webinar series, and today we are going to be talking specifically about the PRISM tool. So let's go ahead and get to the next slide for our agenda. So I'll go over a few webinar tips for participating in a webinar, and then I'll give a brief overview of data demand and use. And for those of you who have been on previous calls, we recognize some of that overview of data demand and use might be repetitive, but it's because we may have new participants that we haven't had experience other webinars that we're repeating that information. So just bear with us as we go over that. Then Natasha Kanaget will do the presentation of the tool. We'll have an opportunity for questions and answers, and then we'll go ahead and wrap up. So troubleshooting. If you lose connectivity during the webinar, please just go ahead and re-enter the meeting room by clicking on the link you were provided. If you're located in the United States, you can rejoin by clicking on the link, or you can also use the conference call number provided. For other troubleshooting questions, you can right-click on the host that you'll see in the list of participants and choose private chat, and you can type in a specific question if you're experiencing any challenges with them, or you can also send an email to leah.gordon@unc.edu. So hopefully with all of those different options, there's a way for you to participate in the call. And again, if for those of you who are going to participate by conference call, we please ask that you mute your line. So tips for participating. Because we have so many people, which is fantastic, on the webinar, we need some way to understand how we're communicating with you. So if you need to ask us a question or you're having any kind of trouble, you can raise your hand by going to the top of your screen, and you can click on the icon of the person there who's raising his or her hand. And then you can speak into your microphone if you have mic access. You may not have mic access with your computer, so hopefully you check that beforehand. When we get to the question and answers, there's two ways you'll be able to participate. One is by raising your hand, or you can type into the question and answer function. You won't have that ability until we actually get to the Q&A. So if you think of questions as we're moving through the content, please take a minute to jot them down, and then you can type your question. And for those of you who have colleagues who might be interested in this and were not able to participate, a recording of the webinar will be made available, and there is the link, www.measureevaluation.org/DDU. And for the other three webinars that have already been conducted, those links are already available on that website as well. So I'd like to go ahead and just give a brief overview of why is this all important to us? Why do we need to improve data-informed decision-making? And we're all aware of challenges involved in providing quality health services in the context where we work. Many countries that we work in have a high disease burden, increasing populations, inadequate numbers and poor distribution of quality health workers, and also inadequate health systems to support the distribution of services. So in these situations, it becomes extremely important to make the best use of the limited resources. As we know, funding is increasingly becoming tight and challenging. So we need to make sure that we're making our decisions based on quality information. Here's a quote from a colleague of ours in Nigeria, a high-level policymaker, that we like to go over and present. He says, "Without information, things are done arbitrarily, and one becomes unsure of whether a policy or program will fail or succeed. If we allow our policies to be guided by empirical facts and data, there will be a noticeable change in the impact of what we do." So that's a really nice example of the need to use data to make decisions to know whether or not our policies or programs are working. So I'd like to go over just a few basic definitions of what is data demand and use. Many times, you know, you can be in the field or in conversations and people will say, "Well, I produced a report and I disseminated it through a listserv," and kind of count that as data use. And we say that's actually not data use. We look broader and for a little bit more depth in terms of what we mean by that. So data use to us means using data as part of the decision-making process to either create or revise a program or strategic plan, to develop or revise a policy, to advocate for a policy or program, for allocating resources, to monitor a program. The review of data must be linked to a specific decision-making process. And this is important because even if you're sitting down and reviewing data and you decide not to do anything, that is still data use because you're using data, you're regularly reviewing it with a team of people to make a decision to either move forward or not move forward. So that's how we define data use. In terms of data demand, this is when decision makers specify the kinds of information they want and they seek it out. So they have a, and this is what we really work to achieve, is to increase the demand for high quality data so that they can make decisions around policies and programs. So this is our data informed decision making cycle, and I'll just take a brief minute to talk about this framework that you see here on the slide, and I'll get my arrow and start over here with collection. So this whole cycle starts with a basic M&E system and the collection of information, including ensuring that that information is available and in a format that's easily understood by relevant stakeholders so that the information can be interpreted and then used to improve policies and programs. And that's a very important link between the availability and utilization. So taking that information and analyzing it, synthesizing it, and making it understandable to people so that they're able to use that information. And the cycle supports the assumption that the more positive experience a decision maker has in using information to support a decision, the stronger the commitment will be to improve data collection systems and continue to use the information they generate. And that gets to the demand side of things. So we see it as, you know, as you collect and make data available and then it's utilized and people have positive experiences, that will then lead to increased demand for more data and higher quality data. And the cycle continues. So you'll note in the orange circle surrounding this framework that this whole cycle is supported by coordination and collaboration. And that's coordination and collaboration among data users and data producers. And what we mean by that are data users are the decision makers. They're people who run the programs, program managers, for example, policymakers, and data producers are those like M&E officers, researchers, people who collect the information. And so there has to be a relationship between the data users and data producers, as well as between management systems and other organizational supports that facilitate and support data-informed decision making. And lastly, the cycle is supported by improving capacity to ensure all individuals have the skills to collect and use data. So this last slide here just shows us how do we go about improving data demand and use. And first, we want to build, like at the very bottom here, you can see, we want to build upon a commitment and ongoing efforts to improve M&E in information systems. This is the foundation of all data use improvement interventions. So there has to be some sort of commitment to monitoring and evaluation and building those systems. Then we go up to the top here, that I'm pointing to with the green arrow, for data users and data producers. As I talked about in the previous slide, this relationship is critical. And these two groups don't always work closely together. So we need to make sure, for those of us who are working out in the field and on different systems, to create opportunities to bring data users and producers together to ensure that the needs of data users are matched with what data producers are collecting. And it's also important to apply tools, build capacity, and have the organizational supports available to foster data demand and use. And our webinar series, the first six in our webinar series, are on specific tools you can use to try to improve data demand and use in an organization or for a program. In our last webinar, we're going to be going over the variety of training materials we have available to build capacity around data demand and use. And at a later date, we'll be developing an additional webinar to talk about organizational supports and how to ensure those are available to foster data demand and use. So you can see that this is an entire sort of package that's needed to improve data demand and use. You can use one tool if needed, but often you're going to need to do multiple things to improve data demand and use. So a combination of tool application with some capacity building and developing organizational supports. So now I'd like to go ahead and turn it over to Natasha Kanaget, who's going to be talking to us about PRISM.
Thanks, Molly. Hi, everyone. Good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on where you are in the world today. Thank you for taking the time to attend this webinar. Our focus today is going to be on Prism applications for data demand and use. But I will walk us through a quick overview of health information systems, a couple of key definitions. I'll introduce the Prism tools and then move on to country applications of Prism with a special focus on DDU. So, our rationale for strong health information systems. Why would we want to generate a health information system? It's simple, to improve health. Reliable and timely health information is an essential foundation of public health action and health systems strengthening at the national and international levels. Health information systems help us understand what is going on in the health system, and we are able to address questions like, are we doing things right? Are we reaching the people we want to reach? Based on the HMN framework, there are two sources of HIS data. On the left, you can see the population-based sources, and on the right, you can see the institution-based sources, which are the individual records, service records, and resource records. Most data on the provision of clinical services or health status at the time of clinical encounters are generated routinely during the recording and reporting of services delivered. For the purposes of the remainder of the webinar today, we are going to focus on this routine data. Now, a routine health information system is a system that provides information at regular intervals of a year or less through mechanisms designed to meet predictable information needs. This includes paper-based or electronic health records and facility and district-level management information systems. Routine health information system performance is characterized by data quality, which is relevance, accuracy, timeliness, and completeness of data. The second characteristic of performance is the continuous use of information, as decision makers explicitly consider information in policy making, planning, management, and service delivery. The challenges of implementing good HIS are known to us. There are parallel, uncoordinated systems, vertical donor-driven programs, multiple reporting requirements, resource constraints, poor data quality, and lack of data use for decision making. Sound data quality does not always guarantee that the data will be used for decision making. These are some examples of some quotes that we have come across in work with colleagues globally, that the challenges they have faced as they have attempted to create and then sustain their health information systems. The data collection forms are too complicated. What is the use of collecting data when nobody uses it? Upper management is not committed to RHIS activities. Now, having recognized the value of health information systems and understanding health system performance, and also having focused on the challenges that we regularly face when implementing our health information systems, we now move on to assessments. Now, traditional assessments have usually focused on the technical issues when they look at improvements in routine health information systems. They look at areas of improvement in data collection forms, data collection methods, or information technology. PRISM, which is the performance of routine information system management, acknowledges the broader context in which RHIS operate. PRISM places RHIS performance within the context of technical determinants, organizational determinants, and behavioral determinants, as you can see on this framework in front of you. Behavioral determinants include the knowledge, skills, attitudes, values, and motivation of the people who collect and use data. Technical determinants include data collection forms, processes, systems, and methods. And organizational determinants look at information culture, resources, and roles and responsibilities of key contributors at each level of the health system. This is going to be a brief overview on the four PRISM tools. Up on top, we have the RHIS Performance Diagnostic Tool. This tool provides us with an overall level understanding of RHIS performance. It has a quality of data module and a use of information module. It captures the technical determinants of RHIS performance, such as the complexity of data collection forms or the user-friendliness of information technology. The pink box below is the RHIS overview and facility checklist. This tool examines technical determinants like structure and design of existing information systems in the health sector, information flows, and the interaction between the various information systems. It allows us to understand the availability and status of RHIS resources necessary for RHIS implementation at the facility and district levels. The green box is the RHIS Management Assessment Tool, or the MAT. This tool is designed to take rapid stock of RHIS management practices like organizing, performance improvement, training, supervision, and finance. The yellow is the OBAT, the Organizational and Behavioral Assessment Tool. As we have spoken about just a little while ago, the behavioral determinants are level of data demand, motivation, confidence, task competence, and problem-solving skills. Organizational factors include level of promotion of a culture of information, merit criteria, and use of RHIS information for performance appraisal. So, from this overview, you can see that the RHIS Performance Diagnostic Tool, the one right on top, is the primary component in the tool set and determines the overall level of RHIS performance and looks separately at quality of data and use of information to identify areas of weakness and strength. The other three tools, the facility checklist, the management assessment tool, and the OBAT, identify the underlying technical, organizational, and behavioral reasons for those strengths and weaknesses. Now, this slide provides a snapshot of the type of questions on data use in the diagnostic tool in the use of information district assessment form. So if you look at DU10, it asks, does the district office have routine meetings for reviewing managerial or administrative matters? DU11, how frequently is the meeting supposed to take place? Promotion and use of RHIS information at district or higher level can be measured through two sample questions. DU15 is, did the district annual action plan indicate that decisions were based on HIS information? And did records of district office of the last 3 months show that senior management issued directives explicitly on use of information? This slide provides a snapshot of the type of questions asked by the OBAT, the Organizational and Behavioral Assessment Tool, on the culture of information. So, to what extent do you agree with the following on a scale of 1 to 7? In health departments, superiors use HMIS data for setting targets and monitoring. Check data quality at the facility and higher level regularly. Provide regular feedback to their staff through regular reports based on evidence. And report on data accuracy regularly. Now, after that snapshot, let's talk about how PRISM assessment findings are used. What is their goal? The goal is to identify interventions that improve the quality of data and use of information. There are three types of interventions: technical, behavioral, and organizational. A few examples of technical interventions are defining a set of essential indicators, standardizing a data generation architecture based on best practices, development of computerized data analysis. Examples of organizational and behavioral interventions. Because as we've seen through the PRISM tool, it is not just about the technical interventions. We have to go beyond in order to arrive at a more holistic assessment of RHIS performance. So a few sample interventions here are creating incentives for use of information, as was done in Pakistan and Uganda, promote HMIS self-assessment in Uganda, and in Thailand, they introduced performance improvement tools focused on a problem-solving approach. Now, after the theory, I think it will be more interesting to get down to some country experiences. Let's talk about how these tools were adapted, how they were used, and how the findings from the PRISM assessments ultimately led to improved data quality and a culture of data use. So the two country experiences I will touch upon right now are Mexico and Pakistan. But we do have a lot of country experts also present at this webinar as part of the audience, and I would encourage them to chime in during the question and answer segment with their own personal experiences of implementing the PRISM tool. So in Mexico, the Ministry of Health, while well informed about the structure and management of the Mexican HMIS, wanted a deeper understanding of the organizational and behavioral factors affecting data quality and information use. They decided to use the OBAT for this purpose because the OBAT provides insight into the promotion of a culture of information, HMIS tasks self-efficacy, HMIS task competence, and knowledge of HMIS purpose and methods of checking data quality. The PRISM framework assumes that if an organization promotes a culture of information, it will also improve competence in conducting HMIS tasks, thus improving their self-confidence in carrying out those tasks. The promotion of a culture of information will be associated with knowing the purpose and methods for checking HMIS data quality. Now, as you can see from this graph up here before you, the survey revealed gaps between respondents' perceptions of the promotion of a culture of information and their actual competence and knowledge of HMIS tasks. This indicated opportunities to bridge gaps. So the blue bar on your extreme left indicates the culture, the perception of culture, where 70% of respondents believed strongly that the MOH promotes checking data quality. The yellow bar graph indicates reality. 57% of the respondents could describe at least two ways of checking data quality. There was a discrepancy. Moving on to the right side of the bar graph, 72% of respondents believed strongly that the MOH promotes use of HMIS information, but only 52% of the respondents could display ways to use HMIS information. Now, how were the OBAT findings in Mexico used? Now, to strengthen HMIS performance, they placed an emphasis on using information in the following ways. A website was created where all three state health departments accessed the OBAT questionnaire and the information processed by OBAT was relayed to the national level. National authorities used this information to prioritize interventions and produce a plan for the incoming government to improve information use and decision making. Measuring HMIS performance based on funding availability was recognized as being important. The second country example, Pakistan. The government of Pakistan wanted to move from their pre-existing centralized HMIS system to a district-based one. They decided to embark on a reform process, which included a baseline assessment, the design and pilot testing of the new district health information system, and an evaluation of the pilot test to assess feasibility for scale-up. Now, the findings of the pilot test evaluation showed that the new DHIS was well received. And this graph before you shows a before and after. 90% of the respondents were satisfied with the DHIS design, its tools, and the training they received. But if you look at this graph now, the blue slope is data accuracy, and the pink slope is use of information. The level of data accuracy before the intervention, which is before the pilot DHIS, was 40%. This shot up to 75% after the implementation of the DHIS. The pink is the use of information. Information levels improved from 10% to 55% after the intervention. Now, how were these findings used in Pakistan? With a special emphasis on DDU. Now, a separate training manual was developed to assess data quality and use of information. Facilities and districts implemented monthly performance reviews using the DHIS information and recorded decisions on a new DHIS register. A national action plan for scaling up the DHIS was approved by the government of Pakistan in February 2007. Now, these are some of the other countries where PRISM has been used. I provided two in-depth examples, and I would welcome my participants with country experience to speak up during the question and answer segment so we can learn more about how the tools have been adapted to suit different circumstances. So some of the countries represented here are China, Uganda, Ethiopia, South Africa, and the PRISM tools have been adapted and used extensively in the LAC region, like in Costa Rica, Ecuador, Mexico, Paraguay, and Peru. So judging by the amount of number of countries that have used the PRISM tools and have used various components, all four tools have not been used together. Some have used the OBAT, some have used the RHIS performance diagnostic tool. Depending on the need and the goals of the health system, the decisions were made on which aspect of the tool was to be used and by whom. So the PRISM tools can be adapted and applied at international, national, or subnational levels. The tools can also be adapted for other data sources. Even though they were designed for routine facility-based health information systems, there is potential for use with a vital events registration system and other non-routine HIS like surveys. The PRISM tools are flexible. As I said, you could use them in any combination. It is ideal to be able to use all four together so that you're able to actually understand holistically what is going on in your health system, but the ultimate decision for which tool to use and when rests with you. The tools are adaptable. Users can modify the tools to match the socio-demographic characteristics of respondents. You could use them with private sector organizations as well as public sector organizations. And the collected data can also be analyzed manually or entered in any data analysis program like Excel or EpiInfo. And last but not the least, they can be used by a variety of stakeholders depending on the needs of the country and the health system. So that wraps up my overview of PRISM and its applications with a focus on DDU. There is a link over here on the Measure website where you can access the PRISM framework and the tools which are available for free. And we can now segue into the questions and answers segment of this presentation.
So if you have a question, there's two ways for you to ask it. You can either go ahead and type your question into the Q&A chat there. There's a box and you can type in your question. Or if you have audio, you can raise your hand by going to the icon at the top. And raising your hand, you'll be granted mic access and you can speak your question. So we'll wait a minute and see about getting your questions, and then we'll get on with it. From Retrack, Joanna says, really interesting examples, but I'm just wondering if these tools work equally well at a lower level, for instance, with one facility or one NGO.
Joanna, thank you for the question. I actually do not know if it's been used by one facility or one NGO, but I do see that they could well be applied at that level. So far, in my experience, that we have used stratified sampling or LQAS to identify the ideal number of facilities that we would want to look at when conducting a PRISM assessment. But whether it's feasible with one NGO or a facility, I would say yes. Personally, I have not experienced that.
Okay, it looks like we also have a question. Jim Tobias has raised his hand. Jim, if you want to go ahead, and remember, now you have mic access. You have to go to the top where the microphone is and click Enable Your Mic. You can go ahead. Okay, it looks like Jim just went ahead and typed his question. And his question is, the slide that shows the population-based and individual-based data, why not build a holistic web-based GIS to handle all of those data in layers of overlay with user capacity to activate, deactivate? It seems like web GIS systems could integrate vital stats, immunization registries, notifiable disease, and more at all scales, regional, national, subnational, and facilities simultaneously.
Hi, Jim. That's a really good question, and I am not a GIS expert, so I can imagine that it would be very useful. In fact, I do have colleagues from the JSI DC office, and I would encourage them to, at this point, step in with their GSI expertise and address this question, because it might make for a better discussion if you're able to talk to somebody who actually is familiar with GIS. So I'm just going to ask my JSI DC colleagues to step in if they can.
Okay, while we're waiting for that, we'll go ahead and take Joe Davis's question. Let me get there. Joe Davis says, of the countries using the PRISM application, is there one using it holistically?
Yes. Thanks for your question, Joe. Mexico has used it holistically, and they have, I mean, the presentation that I did was on the OBAT tool, but Mexico has used the PRISM tool in its entirety in some of their states with good results and a good understanding of RHIS performance. So it's not necessary that you have to use them individually. In fact, we recommend that you use them holistically so that you're able to understand how the system's performing and what the underlying factors are influencing that performance.
Great. We have a couple of comments from Beatrice Plaza, who has worked extensively using PRISM. So she says, one comment back to Joanna Wakia from Retrack, she says the tools do work at that level. So at the facility level. And actually, we'll provide some contact information at the end of this webinar where you could write directly to Beatrice Plaza or to Natasha to follow up specifically if you have questions that are not answered on this call. Beatrice also writes in and says that Peru is a good example. They're a decentralized country, and they used all of the tools at the local level, developed strategic plans with specific interventions. Let's go ahead and take another question from Samuel. And Samuel says, what are the merits of DHIS 2 over DHIS version 1.4? And I'm not sure we, Natasha or I, actually have the answer for that question. So again, this might be a question that you submit offline, and then we can find someone within Measure who could take that question for you. Sorry, Samuel. All right, Paul Ricketts writes in and says, thanks for the illuminating presentations. Can you give us some more information or point us in the direction of more information on the performance improvement tools developed in Thailand? Thanks.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for the question. I could definitely, after the presentation, get in touch with you and send you more information on the performance improvement tools developed in Thailand. I do not have them with me at this presentation, but I can certainly send them to you after.
Natasha? Okay, the next question is from Dana Albert. She says, as with any form of evaluation, people are nervous when it comes to being assessed. Do the PRISM tools provide process examples to engage collaboratively with stakeholders to implement PRISM assessments?
Hi, Dana. This is a great question, because you're absolutely right. There is always the potential for running up against people who are hesitant and wary of, first of all, the term assessment, and then the fact that we are actually conducting a holistic assessment. Sort of feel attacked from all sides. The PRISM tools do not provide process examples. They are tools to actually conduct the assessment. But over the course of this DDU series, we do have a stakeholder engagement tool that works very well in explaining how to bring together the various stakeholders. I would say, though, that in my experience, one way to head off potential wariness is to actually bring the country members along with you from the very start. You know, sit down with them to identify why they need PRISM, why they think that they would like to improve, what they want to improve. Engage stakeholders from all levels of the government, the private sector, the civil society, so that everything is on the table and everybody is comfortable with the assessment moving forward.
Thanks, Natasha. I would just like to add that we did do the session on stakeholder engagement and analysis matrix last week. That was the webinar topic. And so you can go online and listen to that webinar. And also the tools for that are available on the DDU website under Measure Evaluation. In addition, you know, this whole concept at the beginning of the presentation, we talked about the importance of bringing data users and data producers together. And that's a lot of what we talk about in the stakeholder engagement. So I think that that will be helpful for you when you're considering using this. I also want to go ahead, and a couple people like Beatrice Plaza and JSI in DC have written in some comments that I wanted to share with all of you. JSI DC says that their GIS specialist isn't sitting in on this session, but they'll pass the question along to him to get more specific answers around GIS. Beatrice also writes in and says that Paraguay, Peru, Ecuador, and the Dominican Republic have all used the various PRISM tools. So they would be good contacts and good examples to look at. We have another question here from Abdulaziz Mohammed, and he asks, how often do you suggest these tools be applied? Monthly, quarterly, semi-annually, annually, etc.?
You may not like my response to this, because I'm going to say it depends on the needs of the health system and the process at which the stage at which the health information system is. You could use it quarterly. It also depends on what you're going to use the tools for. If you're using it as a monitoring tool, then I would use it more regularly to get a handle on performance. If you're using it as an evaluation tool, then you would use it, you know, at intervals, so that you're able to have baseline assessments as well as a before and after, or if you're using it as a supervisory tool. So there are so many avenues for tool use that the timing of the tool will really depend on the level that you're applying it at, your goal behind the application, and, you know, in a lot of situations, the time available to you.
Thank you. Beatrice wrote in, our other expert on PRISM, and she really wants to make sure that we acknowledge that this is a country-owned process when you're using a tool like PRISM. And she says that it's usually the stakeholders who decide to assess, not us. So in the examples of the different countries where PRISM has been used, the initiative really comes at the country level, and then Measure comes in with the PRISM and works with stakeholders on implementing the various assessments. So I think that's a really excellent point, and thank you, Beatrice, for adding that. We have one more question that I can see, well, maybe more, from Dan. And Dan says, That was very interesting. What does it cost to implement the tool in terms of what do you need to be able to implement it, especially as a single national NGO? Thank you.
That is an excellent question, because it would be top of mind when one is trying to implement something as holistic as this, and especially in the face of competing priorities. We do not actually have a specific number that we can allot to the assessment. It has ranged anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000 to up. It really does depend on the extent of the assessment that is being performed. So countries don't often release that information. It is a little bit hard to separate out what part of the budget was used for the assessment. So I don't have a number for you. But if you wanted to discuss the planning for this tool with us further, please feel free to get in touch with Beatrice or myself, and we would really be happy to talk you through the process and maybe identify how we can take it from there.
Okay, I want to go ahead and share what Beatrice wrote. She said, in the Latin American Caribbean region, we applied both the HMN assessment tool to give an overview and then drilled down to the routine system. Doing both assessments for the country was about $50,000. We have another question from Samuel. Samuel asks, can these tools be adapted for reproductive health family planning interventions?
I personally have not used it for those, but they can, because these tools are adaptable and flexible. The content of the tools can be changed depending on the focus of the program. So if you would like to focus on family planning, you can, and these tools will certainly help you assess those interventions.
Okay, Eric Gears writes in a question, I think related to GIS. We might have to ask Eric for a little more clarification on his question. But he writes and says, measure evaluation has had challenges in the past bringing data sets together based on geography because there are problems around a common way or agreement of identifying geography in a country. There's disagreement on subnational catchment areas and who provides services to whom. So I'm not sure what the specific question is. If you want to follow up with the question, is it maybe around how does PRISM address that issue? We'll wait and see what else is written in on that. In the meantime, if there are any other questions, you can go ahead and type them in. Okay, we're just waiting. It looks like we have most of our questions, so I think we can... That was a really excellent discussion. We had a lot of excellent questions and appreciate them. Oh, I think what Eric just wrote in and said, it's just a comment on how GIS has been applied to bringing data sets together. Yes, and I think the JSI and DC hopefully will get with their GIS people and we can talk a little bit more about the application of PRISM related to GIS. In the meantime, we'll go back and finish up the presentation. We have just a few final slides to go over. Some of our measure evaluation, data demand, and use resources. There's the website, www.measureevaluation.org/DDU. There you can find a link to the Data Demand and Use Toolkit. That lists every single tool that Measure has for data demand and use, and each specific tool has anywhere from 30 to 40 pages with very explicit instructions, templates, guides for each of the tools. It's a very helpful resource. Then we also have our training resources, and there will be a specific webinar on training resources at a later date. But you can go on and actually download specific training sessions, speaker notes, everything you need to conduct a training around data demand and use. Our next webinar will be on February 14th. That's next Tuesday, again at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And we'll be discussing the framework for linking data with action. And to sign up for Data Usenet, that's our community of practice for data demand and use. You can send an email to listserv@unc.edu, and you leave the subject field blank, and in the body of the message, type subscribe DDU. I'm sorry, that got cut off on this slide. But that's a really great resource, the Data Usenet. There's a series of discussions we have several times throughout the year where we tackle different data demand and use issues. There's also everything from announcements, trainings, workshops, or meetings around data demand and use. So our contact information, you can see here, mcannon@futuresgroup.com, and for Natasha, it's natashakanagat@jsi.com, and we're willing to answer questions offline. And if much for your participation, and we look forward to getting questions from you offline or seeing you next week on our webinar for the Framework for Linking Data with Action.